Hello and welcome to the Rhythm Changes podcast. I'm your host, Will Chernoff, and this is the fastest I've ever turned around an episode. I'm recording my reads for this one at 8:37 p.m., and that means that this is hitting the airwaves in less than 12 hours. There's only one reason why I subject myself to all this, which is I have several dozen of the nicest people in town. They are the subscribers at Rhythm Changes. Their paid support makes it all possible, and you can become one of them too by going to rhythmchanges.ca and subscribing now. Thank you very much. All right. Well, this guest, she is something special. She has an energy and a joy about her that I could never match. If you just listen to what she says she's going on to do after this and what she's been up to, it's pretty incredible. The pace of creative activity and the work that she does. This was a shorter conversation than some of the ones I've been featuring as of late, but it's no less action-packed than all those other ones. So without further ado, let's get into it. Our guest today is a trumpet player, a traveler, 7 albums, including Capi, which is coming out on April 26th. She played on Sunday, April 14th in Vancouver at Frankie's Jazz Club. She did a workshop at UBC today on the day we're recording this. So I'm so grateful that the stars aligned and that we're here. Please welcome to the Rhythm Changes podcast, Rachelle Therrien.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. How are you feeling? You came straight here from UBC. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I actually had one of the students gave me a ride. So we kept talking for half an hour. So it's like a very talking day. So if I say weird things today, please be indulgent of me. I've been talking straight for 4 hours, but I'm very happy to be here. It's a very great opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, so first I want to go to the Frankie's concert because I saw some of the stories. I heard from people who were there how awesome it was. I know you had some people who sat in. So can you tell me just a little bit about how you felt last night and what happened?
Well, it was great. I mean, I've been to Vancouver a couple times and it's my first time playing at Frankie's. So it was nice. It was fun and it's a very nice club and people are very attentive and it was a good crowd for a Sunday night. It was fun and I'm just coming back from, we were just on tour with the sextet, with the full band. We played in Calgary, did a workshop, and then played in Kelowna in, a big theater for, a showcase and stuff. So it felt very great to, go back to a jazz club at the end of, a pretty intense short run, but very, very, a lot of pressure on it. So it was good. I love playing jazz clubs. I mean, I love playing huge theaters, but in huge theaters, I always try to bring back the same vibe that is naturally in a jazz club. So it was very fun yesterday. And I got to invite Jody Prosnick and Shruti Ramani. And I also invited a young kid, William, his name, trumpet player.
That's a good name.
Yeah, that I met through VSO, actually, because I gave a workshop a month ago at VSO. And that's where I heard him play. So I was like, oh, come sit in. It was fun.
What did they play with you?
Well, I had them sit in on Caravan because it's a good standard and it's a lot in a jazz show. So it made sense to play that Juan Tizol tune. But yeah, I also had Shruti sitting in very, very last minute on one of my tunes called The Wizard, which is a very fun 5/4 clave based weird tune. And I just invited her 8 bars until the next chorus that she said. And so it wasn't planned. And I think she was surprised and she did an amazing job. It was very cool.
Okay. We have a musically literate listenership of this show. Can I put you on the spot on the 5/4 clave?
Oh, yeah.
Can you clap
course.
A 5/4 clave? Can you show us what this is? What are we talking about here?
One.
Very cool.
Gotta finish it. Right? Yeah, well, it's fun. I love playing on different claves. Clave is just it's basically a spine of a rhythm, and it's this is a son clave, right? Well, or son rumba. It's a 2/3 rumba clave kind of. over a 5/4 rhythm, and it's great because it makes it like often we play a 5/4 with that like take five clave thing. Exactly.
Doing robot movements.
Exactly. Which is a clave, and it's a great clave. But I mean, we've heard it on so many tunes that it's kind of fun to like, this doesn't fit over the clave that I just played. So it's great. It kind of forces the bass to do something else.
Yeah. So you told us about the locals who sat in. Now we're talking bass. Tell me who else is in your band. Talk about the other musicians who you brought here to Vancouver. Who's in your band?
Well, yesterday the show was with the rhythm section. So Michel Medrano on bass, which Michel Medrano Brindis, he's one of my favorite drummer forever. And he's also one of my biggest, oldest friend. He's my best friend since I studied in Cuba in 2008. So we've been very close since. And it's... he's the drummer on this last record. We're going to talk about it maybe later, but there's a lot of musicians, but he's the drummer on every track.
That's on Mi Hogar, right?
Yeah, on Mi Hogar. And then Alex Bellegarde on bass, which is like one of my oldest, biggest brother. Like, we know each other since I'm 16, and he's a huge influence on the Montreal jazz scene. And Willy Soto Barreto on piano, which he's a young Cuban piano player that just moved to Montreal the day they closed the border of COVID.
Oh.
So it's like he's pretty fresh in the Montreal jazz and Latin jazz scene. It's pretty cool to have him. And the two guys that weren't with me at Frankie's, it's that were with me for the rest of the tour. It's Lazaro Martinez on percussion and Diomer Gonzalez on percussion as well.
Nice. Yeah. Now, Mi Hogar, I remember... you put together a band is so you, and it's such a big statement of what you've done, because you've toured and traveled and had bands in different places more than pretty much anybody else I've encountered live. And on that album, you had a band and you recorded it through Montreal, where you had lived, through New York, where you live now, and you live for probably almost a decade now, with Cuban musicians too. And you had like a 18-20 piece band on that album that came out last year, right?
Yeah, well, there's also a session in Toronto that I did, because there was musician I wanted to include.
I was trying to remember what was the third place. Yeah. I was like, was it Cuba? But you did have an album that you recorded in Colombia as well. So look at all these different places. That's yes. Pensamiento, right?
Yeah, Pensamiento, yeah. Proyecto Colombia.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I'll talk a little bit later. Let's finish with Mi Hogar. Yeah, yeah. It's Mi Hogar. It's like there's a lot of people I wanted to involve in that record, and there's a lot of people I wanted to involve, and I had to stop at 25. So
yeah.
25 or 28, around that. So there's Magdalis Saving, which is an old friend that plays percussion that's in Toronto, and Roberto Riveron, that I've been playing with for the past 12 years. Every time I go to Toronto, I end up playing with Roberto. So I had to include him in the session, the Toronto session. And there's Danae Olano on piano as well, that I met through later on. She's a little bit younger, but she just released a record that is beautiful. It's her first album and stuff. Oh, so wow. I wanted to involve her in the record. So that's the Toronto session. With Michel on drums, he came with me to Toronto, with Sylvain Arnaud, which is a sound engineer that she recorded the session in Toronto and in Montreal. And in New York, I had a lot of guests too. And it's like, there's a little surprise coming up soon too, because I did those three sessions and I recorded an hour and a half of music. So I split it in two, and there's Mi Hogar Volume 2 coming out in the fall. So
actually going to be called Mi Hogar Volume 2?
I guess so. I guess so. I think so.
Okay.
I mean, it makes sense because it's the same recording as the same session.
Oh, very cool.
And there's just more guests, because there's Elizabeth Rodriguez from Ocan that's also, it's featuring Ocan on the Volume 2, and it's featuring Ivan Renta from the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra and Rafi Malquier on trombone as well in the New York session. There's just a lot more guests on. I kept all the special guests for the Volume 2. So it's kind of the same. It's the extension of that record with more guests on it. Oh, wow.
It's such a great record. That's such cool energy. So I can't wait to hear that.
Yay.
You're throwing around. There's people. We're going to name like 400 people by the in like an hour here. Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. It's such a generous project too. It's like that your instinct is, oh, I want to include as many people as possible from as many different places I've been. I don't know. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, it's hard for me to choose who I'm like, it was hard for me to choose who I wanted to play with. Like my Montreal sextet, we've been playing a lot together, and more, even more since the record came out, because it's like my core band in Montreal. But like in New York, there's so many great players I want to play with, and I've been playing with, and just over the past 15 years in that Latin jazz scene, I've been playing with so many people. It was really a hard choice to pick those 25 people. So if I had to stick to only six, it would have been even harder. So, and I mean, you know, like it's hard to tour with a band these days. Everyone is busy. Like all the great musicians, we're all very, very busy. So it's normal that the lineup changes from a gig to the other. So I was like, why choose? I'll just use as many people as possible that are going to play with me in the coming up shows.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, everyone is very great. Like there's Manuel Valera, there's Ivan Renta, it's a lot of great names. There's John Benitez. And I mean, I'm not showcasing any superstar. I'm just using people that I'm going to play with. John has been playing with me since forever, and he's the biggest legend on the record. But he's on the record because he's a mentor for me, and he's part of my community. So it's not, I didn't hire any like big names that are outside of my community. It's just people I've been working with that I care for very deeply. So
yeah,
I think that's why it's fun like this.
It's very special. You mentioned the Afro Latin Jazz Orchestra. That's when you're playing with the band led by Arturo O'Farrell, and the band was nominated for a Grammy for its album during your tenure playing for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm lucky that I'm part. It's one of my gigs, like my sideman gigs in New York, and I'm very grateful to be part of the orchestra. Arturo is so inspiring in everything he does musically and extra musically, because he does a lot of community work and political work and like stuff, like life-changing work. He's so inspiring. It's like, it's great to, musically, it's great to be part of it. And humanly, it's a very learning, big learning experience that I have, to be just being there and seeing everything he does. It's impressive. It's like, for some people, I do a lot. And when I'm next to him, I'm like, man, I have so much stuff to do. I feel like I don't do anything. It's pretty amazing.
But I bet you get inspired by that feeling.
Yes, really, really. It's the main reason why I'm grateful to be there is that inspiration I get from it. It's like, I want to be like him when I grow up. And then it's great to play every Sunday with a big band, and with not just any big band. I mean, it's Chico O'Farrell's legacy to like all that genre of Latin jazz, all that trail of Latin jazz, because Latin jazz kind of grew up in different ways. It's like jazz, so there's a lot of different trails, and this one is a very remarkable one. All the sound of Dizzy Gillespie, it comes from Chico O'Farrell, so it's pretty amazing to be playing that legacy.
You said you play every Sunday. That's the band's gig at Birdland?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In New York. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, and it's cool to play at Birdland. I mean, it's an iconic bar, and it's now I get in Birdland and it feels like home, so it's kind of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard you say when I was prepping for this that you first got exposed to Afro-Latin rhythm in this music before you went to Cuba when you were in Montreal from Haitian musicians. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, my first, very, very first contact with Latin music is when I did Drum Corps. We did Con Alma from Dizzy Gillespie.
Which you recorded on Mio Bar.
Exactly. It was kind of a round circle to do an arrangement of it. But when I moved to Montreal and I was about like 16, 17, I started working with bands, and I played a lot of Haitian compa. I played a lot of West African music. I played a lot of Gnawa music too from Morocco. So it's like before Latin music, I've always been included in the different immigration diasporas that are in Montreal that are very, very culturally active. And I got lucky to be welcomed by that scene more than any other scene. I learned so much from different cultures through that Montreal world music, like global music scene.
Yeah. And you got to play at least once at a festival in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, right? You've played there.
Yeah, I played there with a group. I went twice with Wesley Ban. I played for like 10 years with this Haitian guitar player that lives in Montreal. His name is Wesley Ban. His music is beautiful.
I've never heard. I gotta go check it out.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. Singer, guitar player, and his music is very, it's very dense music, and there's a little bit of African. It's a Haitian artist that has a Montreal sound that is very global music. There's a lot of influence from a lot of different places, and he's played with a Cuban drummer. It's a very, very fun band. And we went to Port-au-Prince twice, and that's how I met the people from the Pap Jazz Haiti. And I went right before pandemic, January 2020. I was by myself at... like, they didn't have the budget to bring my whole band, so I do this often. Now people know, so they bring me just by myself, and I played with local people. So I did my show at Pap Jazz with Haitian musician oh, wow. from Port-au-Prince, and it was beautiful. It was such a blast, because they brought a little bit of the Haitian compa and rara vibe into my music, which was, like, very beautiful. Yeah. And I've been traveling a lot like this too, like in Europe. But a lot of times I went to Spain like more than 10 times, and it's always with Spanish musician. And in Paris now I have like two different bands, and I've been to Ukraine 3 times, and it's always with local musician, and it's beautiful. I mean, you get to know the places so much more when you actually play with local people.
Yeah. I've also heard you say that for the vast majority of your adult life, you haven't spent more than 10 days in the same city at a time.
Well, maybe not the vast majority,
or like the last several years that you've been working so hard.
Maybe the 3 years before pandemic, and since 2022, it's been back to the... Yeah, I had like 10 days off. I had 1 week off 2 weeks ago, and I decided to take a last minute. Take plane ticket to New Orleans.
So when you have time off, what do you want to do? Travel.
Exactly. So I'm on the road all the time. So it's great. I love it. I feed myself from it. So it's good.
Yeah. When you get into a place, I don't know, maybe this is different if it's a brand new place for you, if it's a place you're coming back. But like, I mean, I don't travel a lot. And there's a wide range of people who do. Like when you get to a new city, like day one or night one or like day first weekend, what do you want to do? Like, what do you do when you get to a new place? What do you think about and what do you want to go do?
Eat.
Yeah, no. That's a good place to start.
It depends. It really depends. Like often I don't have a lot of time. And I mean, there's something I learned in Cuba is that if your day works exactly as it was planned, it was an okay day.
Oh, you got to have this spontaneous.
So yeah, you got to trust. Like when I tour with a band, with my own band, like I can't leave that much space for like intuitive happenings because I'm leading, and it's like,
you have the responsibility. I'm organized.
Exactly. I have the responsibility of everyone eating and everyone sleeping. And so I have to plan a little bit more. But when I'm traveling by myself, I often try to just trust and feel the vibe. And like, I trust people to bring me the cool places to discover. It's like, you can look on Yelp, but you want to know what your colleagues from another places will do on a Friday night.
So you want to get a recommendation. So,
exactly. And you let people bring you to places and you get to know a lot more.
Yeah. Do you like, I mean, you have this long history now in being involved in the Latin music tradition. Do you also dance? Do you dance like salsa dancing and those styles of dancing?
Yes. I mean, I learned how to dance in Cuba just by dancing. Just dancing with people It's funny because I didn't dance for like 8 years, and I just started dancing again this past December.
before the last couple of months, you hadn't done it for a long time.
Yes, it's like I wouldn't go out dancing. Like and you never unlearn how to dance. It's like bicycle. You know what I mean? You'll be rusty at first, but you never forget how to dance. But now it's like I kind of needed a little bit of a hobby, like just something to disconnect from all the work, which is music, which is great, but like all the organization and the planning and there's a lot of business and computer work when you're a musician, when you're a band leader, actually. So I kind of needed something to get distracted. And I was like, oh, let me start dancing again. So now I try to go dance. Like I came to Vancouver in March with Ostara. Uh-huh. And we had one night off. And I was like, oh, let me find a salsa club in Vancouver.
What did you find?
And I went to Mango's.
Okay.
There's a bar called Mango's here in downtown.
We're downtown, yeah, so close to here. Yeah.
And it's great. It was awesome. And I just went by myself. And it's what is great with the social dance is that you just go and start dancing with people. And you're always going to have fun. And people are respectful. And it's great.
Well, I was at that concert at the McGee Theater. I wrote about it on Rhythm Changes. And that was an afternoon concert. So depending on your timing, you were good to go. Either the night before or the night after, whatever you did. There you go. You got the free time. Right?
Actually, we were in studio. We did an album in March.
So you were in studio before or after? Yeah, before, right. Yeah,
exactly. And the Thursday, we recorded Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And the Thursday after the studio, I went to dance. Everyone was exhausted. So they were not going to hang anyway. So I just went and...
So that's funny because like everyone, you're saying everyone was exhausted. Now for me, I definitely consider myself a big introvert. So when I'm exhausted, what that means for me is I want to be at home and I want it to be like in a low stimulate environment. But I do have friends who are very extroverted. And when they're exhausted, what they want to do to recharge is they want to go do something like that. Yeah. Is that you?
I guess so. And I mean, like salsa dancing is great. Because you don't have, like, as a follower, woman, but anyone could be a follower or leader. I'm actually learning how to lead in dance right now. But as a follower in salsa dancing, all you have to do is follow.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is use your feet as percussion, dance over the music, like, don't lose the feet. And everything, all the turns, all the moves that you do is led by a leader.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's really relaxing. Because I have nothing to do. I'm moving. So it is energizing because it's like sport. Dancing is it's a very good sport. And I have no decision to make.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it's like peace of mind. And it's like music that I love. So I'm listening to great music and I'm sweating.
Uh-huh.
And I have no decision to make.
Oh, that's so cool because that's exactly what you said you needed a break from. That's the part of the music work that stresses you out is having to administer all the decisions.
Exactly.
And this gives you an outlet from just that, but it still lets you, you know, be physical and energized.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I really love it.
Yeah. So you had that formative period when you were studying at the school in Havana in like 2008, 2009 and you've been back probably a few times. When was the last time you were back and what did you do?
Last time I went back to Cuba was in January, this past January 2024.
Oh, wow.
I went for the jazz festival. So I got to play there with a local band.
Yeah, you have a band in every city.
Yeah, my drummer Michel was there, so he played with me, and we got awesome kids, people I didn't know since before. They're like all in their early 20s, or even the percussionist was 16.
Wow.
And he did an amazing job. I was like, are you kidding? 16, for real? It's amazing. Yeah, and I haven't been in Havana in a while. I think the last time before that, I only went once to Havana before that, since 2012.
Wow.
I went back to Cuba a lot because my partner was from Camagüey, so like my second family is in Camagüey. So I would go back to Camagüey a lot just to visit family.
Yeah. When you went back a couple months ago, or any other times in recent years that you went back, did you get a sense of how much had changed since that period of time when you went there to study?
Yeah, a lot of stuff changed. Well, pandemic affected Cuba a lot, food-wise, resource-wise. Like Cuba always had like pretty much a lot of issues on those aspects and stuff. But since COVID, it really took a long time. And as I said, I was going a lot to Camagüey, and Camagüey is like I think in the rural part of Cuba, it's even worse. I actually was surprised how Havana wasn't that bad as like the provinces. And there's new clubs in Havana, like Fabrica de Arte, which is pretty amazing. It's like one of the coolest club I've been worldwide.
Oh, wow.
It's like they have I think, 4 stages, music simultaneously. There's an art gallery. There's like a lot of bars. There's like different food place, all in that like art space. It's all about art. They have a lot of music, a lot of like presentation. It's called Fabrica de Arte Cubano, and they have like different, they call it Nave 1, Nave 2, Nave 3, Nave 4. It's like different stages, and they have like a lounge, and it's just amazing. And the cocktails are great. Food is great. It's cool.
It just struck me while you were describing that you have had like a number of experiences of like becoming fluent in something. Like your first language, French, mm-hmm. I'm sure. Your second language, English, maybe in school along the way when you were growing up? Or?
Yeah, when I was growing up, my mom's family was in the U.S., so they would send me to the U.S. to learn English. I remember my first trip to Mississippi, I didn't know a word in English, and I was left alone with my cousins, and I was like, what's going on? It was funny. But yeah, and then Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish. Yeah, it sounds like from your time studying in Havana, from there, you were talking about how you learned to dance while you were there too. And that's when I realized like, oh, you kind of became fluent in that expression as well as like the language expression. And it feels to me like you've kind of become an expert at becoming fluent in something and like enjoying that process and ending up at a place where like you belong to it kind of thing.
Well, I mean, like... I mean, jazz is improvisation, and improvisation is conversation between people from different backgrounds. Because even if we have the same background, we have different experience. So we have a different experience. We're having a conversation.
Yeah.
I love that language. I love languages in general, and it's fun.
Yeah.
Nice way of saying it.
Oh, thank you. I love this cover. I love the colorful.
Yes, yeah. It's... It's Yves Archambault that made the cover. He was the designer of the Montreal Jazz Festival for 35 years.
Oh.
So all the Montreal Jazz Festival logos that we know, the cat, the I don't know if you know, but if you think of all the design of the Montreal
People
Jazz Festival,
will know
there's a
this.
Lot of iconic images, and it's all him.
Huh.
Yeah, he worked 35 years for the Montreal Jazz Festival, and then it was a great job for an artist because he was hired by them to just create all year round. But yeah, he's amazing to work with, and he's helping me with Capi actually. He's the one that designed the book. So
yeah, and that's a very visual project as well. It has those kind of elements to it as well. Oh, good.
Yeah. I don't have an apple. Fruity.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great to work with artists, and I want to do it more. Yeah. I had a phase that I had my face on my albums, and I don't really like that. I prefer having artistic. It's another way of describing the music.
The 7 albums, like the ones that have your off the top of my head, you'll see if I pass the test here or if I mess up, but the ones that have your face on them, definitely Vena has your face on it. The album that you put out in mid-March 2020, which is a whole thing that you did. Why Don't You Try? It has your face on it. Mm-hmm. That's your 4th album. That's before Vena. I can't remember if Home Inspiration has your face on it or not. It doesn't. But I know that your first album, On Track, it has a place on it. It has a location that I think you said is in Cuba, but I don't think you actually fully talked about what that place is. I don't know if you're comfortable too or not, but can I ask, what is the place that's on the cover of On Track, or like, does it have any special meaning?
The place itself?
Yeah, like the place that is photographed on the album cover.
Oh, it was actually a hazard.
Okay, on a road. I know it's on a road.
Yeah, it's a track.
Yeah.
It's a train track. But it's a guy that I wanted to work with to do the design, we were talking about Cuba and stuff, and he happened to just be in Cuba like a couple months before, and he had that he took that picture by pure hazard, casual, like unplanned,
just like pure happenstance. Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, this is kind of crazy. The album's called On Track, and you have a picture of a track in Cuba that is like kind of magical. It just happened like this. It wasn't planned. I don't know that exact place.
Okay, yeah. So it's not like a place that you spent time at or something. It just like it. There's a coincidence aspect of
coincidence.
It to the
that's
project.
The word I was looking for.
We're trying to going across like two languages in a place that has a third language, finding the the word for the place. At this point you've done good then, because like that's only two out of seven records that have your face on it, so
Pensamiento, I had my face on it.
Just
a tiny
I thought
little.
It was like a graphic of like a trumpet or something. It was colorful. I don't remember it having your face on it like that,
which is good. I wish I had a picture of the whole band on it, because it really was an experiment.
Recording in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mixed in Montreal, right? But recorded in Colombia.
Mm-hmm. And the whole concept of that record is it's that ethnomusicologic experiment that I hope I'm going to have experienced, like, opportunity to do again. Because basically, that whole concept of jazz being a music of expression, a music of communication through improvisation, it's like, that's the power of jazz, is that you can actually go anywhere in the world and have a musical conversation with anyone. Because as a jazz musician, you're trained to improvise. And most traditional music everywhere in the world are improvised music.
Yeah, like most folk traditions or things, it's certainly oral tradition, right? Yeah, learned by ear and passed down by ear, yeah.
So you can literally go any little rincón, any little corner of the world, and like meet with people and create music together. So I had the opportunity to do a tour with the Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra for a month in Colombia. So we did the whole tour of Colombia, and I was like, well, let me take advantage of this opportunity and do my own record. So I met people throughout Colombia. And how I chose the musician was I had like list of names of musician with phone numbers, and I didn't have access to internet. We were on the road. I had a flip phone in the bus. Like there's a tune called La Wawa. La Wawa is like a Cuban slang to say a bus. But, like, we were 28 people with kids and giant Muppets on a bus all over Colombia. And I was like learning the music and like trying to choose the musician for the session I was doing in Bogota at the end. And I literally chose the musician. Like I trusted the names I was getting of musician, but I chose who was going to play on the record with their vibe
on the phone.
Like if they understood, if I felt they understood the idea, and if they felt excited about it.
Wow. And you're speaking to them in Spanish because you're fluent already at this point.
Yeah. And they were like, Canadian? it was kind of funny, and a lot of them didn't know each other. Like, so I had like four musicians from the Atlantic coast, four musicians from the Pacific coast, and four musicians from the jazz scene in Bogota. So I had we found a studio, tiny studio, of Mauro Castillo and Santi Jimenez. Mauro Castillo is actually the guy in that plays the Disney movie.
Oh, I don't know.
Encanto.
Okay.
Bruno.
Okay.
The famous Bruno. Yeah. No, Bruno.
Oh, the song.
The famous song. Yeah. He's Bruno. But he's playing trombone on my record before being Bruno.
Oh.
So it was a studio. They were so generous. Like they invested the money I gave them for the recording to buy cameras and screens so we could actually record live. Because it was a tiny studio. We had space in the main studio room. We had the drums, a keyboard, guitar, and the percussion. The marimba was in the office. The horns were behind the board. So, like, they were recording with headsets because the tres was sitting on the toilet in the bathroom.
Huh.
It was like, it's the only way we could record live and isolate a little bit was like this. So they actually, the upright bass was in the closet. It's like, It was great. And we could record live because they invested in those cameras and stuff. It was such a beautiful human experience. And I just wrote structures for all of us to improvise together. I had no idea how it would turn out. And it was for me, it's like those memories, it's one of the most beautiful thing I can bring to grave with me. So I'm very happy I did that.
Wow. Mm. Okay. So, I mean, first of all, you show up in a country and you are connecting people who live in that country. So, wow. And it sounds like you had a long stay in Colombia. Was that your first time there?
It was my first time in Colombia. And I learned a lot about Colombian rhythms and Afro-Colombian rhythms from both Pacific and Atlantic. And actually, like the music that mostly was exported back then, now it's changing a little bit, but like back then, the Colombian music we knew was mostly from the Atlantic coast, like cumbia and mapalé, and like it's more binary music too. But all the current of the Pacific, I discovered all the Pacific music through one day. The first 2-3 days we were in Colombia was in Cali, and it was La Feria de Cali. And during Feria de Cali, it's like a huge festival happening, like end of the year, like holidays, Christmas, whatever. There was one day that was El Día del Pacífico, like the Day of the Pacific, and it was all bands from Pacific coast of Colombia. And I sat down and I spent the whole day, the whole band left, and I was right there by myself. I was like, what is this? It sounded like so much more similar to like Caribbean Latin music that I was more familiar with, like all bata drumming and like more ternary, like 12-8, and it has marimba, which is like the iconic instrument of that region, which is very similar to balafon, which is kind of an African marimba. That
so you're seeing the parallels.
Exactly. And I loved the sound so much, and I was like, okay, so everything that I had planned I destroyed, and I started from scratch that day. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do an encounter between those two. I'm gonna discover as much as I can over those rhythms, and like do an encounter between musicians of this of Atlantic, of Pacific, and jazz. And that's kind of how it happened. But it was very intuitive, like last minute change. Oops.
Yeah. Fun. Everything you had planned. You mean like compositions that you had written for the project?
Exactly.
Yeah. So you went and changed.
Exactly. Because everything I knew was more of the Atlantic part. But like discovering that rhythm, I started like changing. There's one piece on the record. It's Porque Me Pegas from Etelvina Maldonado. That normally is a buirengue, which is from the Atlantic part. And I put marimba on it, and we're playing it with marimba, which is not necessarily common. But just tiny little things like that is kind of mixing both cultures. And I mean, I'm not a specialist of Colombian rhythm. I learned a lot about Colombian culture during that process, which was, it's all part of that conversation. When you're having a conversation with someone, you learn about them. So that's the beautiful part of doing that. I want to do more.
Yeah.
Different places.
You were talking about percussion and stuff. You can play some Cuban percussion, right?
A little bit. I mean, I'm not a percussionist. I think I'm a frustrated percussionist. I have batas at home, so I practice a little bit of batas and stuff, and it I love it. I do a lot of hand percussion, like güiro and claves and stuff like that. I studied bongos and timbales when I was in Cuba, in Havana at school. I don't have a timbales at home. I wish I had, but it's like the neighbors, I'm already annoying them so much with trumpet. I'm like, timbales is the loudest thing you could have. I'm like, maybe not. But one day I'll have a little home studio and I'll practice timbales again.
Yeah, like a shed in the back where you got some separation. Yeah, you have your percussion jams. Mm. So we got to talk about Kafi. There's two singles out. There's two tracks available when I went to the Bandcamp. I've listened to both of them. It's a big departure from Mi Hogar, for example. You know, it's another place that you're going here. As a composer, you've gone to all these different places, and all your projects showcase your compositions. I mean, when you did Moments Notice and Con Alma on Mi Hogar, it's like that was unusual for you, because it's about you, and on your early records like your bandmates too, but it's all about the original compositions most of the time for you. But this one, it sounds like it's more just improvised based, and it's not even so much you fully fleshing out and composing the tunes, but just it sounds very, very different from your previous mm-hmm. projects. But I haven't heard all of it because it's still coming out at this time. So what can you tell me about that, about how different that direction is and what that's like?
It's great. It's like, it's hard for me because I know some people, like often the music industry likes to put artists in a box. And I'm a multi-personality person,
I think. Which is wonderful.
Or a musician. And I mean, I've been playing improvised music since teenage years. Like my first experience of improvised music was a woman, was an amazing guitar player from Montreal. She had a project called Les Projets de la Baleine. And she brought me to Tadoussac. Like, and it was like a place, a hippie hostel in the most beautiful place of Quebec, and like we would play 5 to 7 just free improv with weird sounds, and it's like people would leave because it was too weird, and we would just play for 2 hours. The only people staying there were like on a certain substance.
Yeah, for sure.
And they were having a blast, and I was having a blast, and I was like, I mean, improvised music is really, for me, it's really music for the people playing it. It's like it's the total place of freedom mm-hmm. and communication with no, you choose on the structure, you choose on the limits, you choose on you choose on the box you want to put yourself in, but it could be as free as everything free or with some different structures and composition in that kind of way was a little bit different. Capi's project is actually, since I started playing trumpet, my dad wanted me to write music over my grandfather's poetry. My grandfather passed before I was born, so I didn't really know him. And it took me a while to actually do it. You know, like a kid, when your parent wants you to do something, you tend to not do it. so it really took me a long time to do it. And during pandemic, I had the opportunity to do a residency at Centre d'Expérimentation Musicale. It's like the Center for Musical Experimentation in Chicoutimi. CEM, it's an amazing space. And their concept is, because it's a smaller town, it's a more like further town. Their concept is that they bring composers or artists there and they work with local musician. So it helps keep actual good level of musicianship there in the region. So it's a very, very cool concept. So I had the opportunity to work with them for a full month in Chicoutimi.
By yourself?
By myself.
Oh, wow.
So it was like very beautiful, and it was a perfect experience. It was a perfect opportunity to actually finally work on my grandfather's poetry. So I digged in his poetry like fully, and it was life-changing actually to kind of discover for real my grandfather. And not all his poetry is about all the subject in his poetry, most of it is on the scenery, the nature of northern Quebec coast, Magani and Labrador, which is a territory I don't really know either. So I kind of discovered him and the territory through his writing, and it's so beautiful. Like I fell in love with that through his poetry. So yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of improvised. Everything is improvised. Some of them we're following the poems. Some of them I did write composition, but it's more structures that are I'm actually printing a book. I'm re-editing all my grandfather's poetry, and inside the book there's sheet music of the things that I wrote. Some of them it's like drawings and stuff. It's pretty abstract, but we're following a sheet music, and maybe like 2/3 of the music, the rest is like following the poetry or improvising together.
Yeah, there's a lot of tracks. Yeah, 2 tracks that I've heard so far. There's like 12 or 13 tracks.
There's 13 tracks. Yes, yeah. It's like an hour and a half. Yeah. It's like not
that's so
a
cool.
Yeah. It's and there's a lot of spontaneous thing. There's a piece that I because it's with a lot of effects too and sound treatment, which is something I never used on the past records. I've done a little bit in different projects, but it's the first time I actually do it on my own and. So I manage my own effects pedal, but I also have a microphone that goes into the guitar player Pascal Beaulieu's sound treatment. So there's part of the there's part of the sound treatment that is improvised that I don't control. So I'm actually improvising with what he's modifying of my sound. So it's kind of in real time improvisation with effects, which is super fun. And at some point on one of the recordings, because we recorded live, he pitched an effect that sounds so funny that it made me laugh. And I just started laughing. Like, my laugh sounded so funny on his effects that it just triggered me to laugh. And on the track, I kept it. I kept the track. I'm like, it's awesome. I mean, it's the moment. I'm sharing that moment. That's all about improvised music. I think I laughed for like 2 minutes on that track. It's pretty insane. But I love it. I hope people are going to enjoy it. It's completely different from all the previous projects.
Yeah. And it's called Capi because it's like Capitan, because your father was a ship captain, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Actually, my grandfather, they used to call him Capi. It was his nickname, okay. But he wasn't captain. He just loved boats and they called him Capi. And my dad became a boat captain. So yeah, it's more like a tribute to my dad because it was his dream. And we did the recording in 2021 and it took me a long time to release it because my dad passed 2 years ago. So it's very emotional to finally release the book. And like, it was his dream. I mean, I didn't know my grandfather, but he really wanted this to happen. So I'm happy to do that.
Yeah. And like we talked about earlier, I heard you with the OSTAR project last month, and your tune among all the OSTAR people was dedicated to your dad as well. Your composition that you brought to that concert, because everybody brought at least one, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We all brought two tunes to the recording session, and because there's two albums, there's two recordings with OSTAR. One that is going to be instrumental, more with like the core quintet.
And core quintet is you and Allison Au and Jody and Manitosov and Valerie, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then there's a lot of vocalists that are guests with the project, including Shruti and Laila Bieli. And I wanted to bring that poetry song just as also to link a little bit the project Capi to it. And the very, very, very first poem of the book that we're reediting, it's Voyage sans retour, and it's kind of that experience with OSTAR. It's like, I've never experienced to play with an all-woman project before, and to touch this experience of playing jazz in a way that is so easy, it's like a travel that, Voyage sans retour, it means travel with no return, and it's like, for me, playing with OSTAR was that. It was a life-changing experience that I'll never come back from. It's like I'm different since this very first day with OSTAR. So it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you say very first day, and that's cool because you are an original member. I heard you 2 years ago in 2022 when you played at Jazz at the Vault, and that was actually the first article that I wrote at Rhythm Changes ever. So I have that concert to thank to get my snowball rolling in a lot of ways.
I think that's where we met.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. I have not actually had an active member of the group on this podcast before because Shruti has done an episode with me before joining the OSTAR project.
Nice.
So this is my first opportunity to ask anybody on the show to talk about what it was like to be at the origin of that group and what that experience was like. So, I mean, there's six or seven different sides of that story from the people who played on the first album, and you're still there, and like Allison is still there, and obviously Jody and Amanda are still there. But what can you talk about the origins of when you were there at the beginning of the OSTAR project?
Well, I mean, it was so magical. Like, for me, it was just a gig. I got a call from that woman that I didn't know, that is Jody, and that we got Jodified. I always say we're Jodified.
I like it.
Jody, yeah, Jody's amazing. It was a gig. I mean, I got a call to do this recording. I was like super excited about it. Got to Vancouver. We all met at the airport. The only person I knew in the project was Senacadora on drums, because we knew each other since New York and a little bit. Like, we weren't super close. We became close through OSTAR, actually, a lot closer since then. But what was I going to say? Yeah, like 3 days. We met at the airport. 3 days in our Airbnb. In 3 days, we did a documentary, a concert, a rehearsal for the concert and the recording and a full recording in a one-day studio. It was so easy. It was so crazy. It was like so bonding experience and easy experience. And it was, I mean, we did a record in like not even a full day. And it's like one take, two take. Okay, it felt good. Like no doubt. Nobody was doubting anyone. There was no judgment. It just felt so easy. And it was the first time that I've ever experienced to do music like that with people that had a very similar experience than I had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a male jazz musician, you experience almost every day of your life to play with people that look like you and have a similar background than you do. As a woman musician, you don't get that experience quite often. So it really, really, really was beautiful and life-changing.
I would imagine this new album, probably still a continuation, probably same vibe still going.
Same thing.
Yeah. New people added, same vibe, yeah.
Exact same thing. I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah. And there was more people because it was like guests and vocalists, but it was just easy. It's just great to play with people that are not judging you and not doubting you. And the engineer, that studio man you have in Vancouver, the warehouse studio, and
Sheldon's a hardcore.
Sheldon, wow, I'm such a fan of Sheldon. It's kind of a diamond in the recording.
Yeah.
I mean, last time I worked with my mic setup and stuff, and I got here this time, and it was all set up the same way.
The same.
We barely checked anything. Yeah. Like I literally played 30 seconds, and it was fine. Like in less than an hour, we were recording the first tune, and it was. And he's just so invested too. So it's just good vibes and no judgment and just trust and like creating music together and. Beautiful, and I'm so grateful to be part of it.
Nice. There's one guy I want to ask you about to close it out, because he and I grew up together in New West. He has pretty much the same name as me. We used to be Little Will and Big Will. Aww. You played on his album Will Clements that came out last year. Just tell me your Will Clements story to take us out here, because I know he'll hear
it. Oh man, I wondered if you knew each other. I love Will. He's so great, and he's so humble, and I wish he's gonna do so much more with his music, because he's a beautiful artist, and he's such a nice person. I mean, he picked us up yesterday at the airport with my band, and we all squeeze into his, it's a tiny Prius, like the hybrid, the tiny one, and we all squeeze there, and we had the best ride to downtown Vancouver. No, Will is a beautiful soul and very inspiring, and I can't wait to work with him again and see what he's going to do.
Well, he knew we were doing this, but he didn't tell me that he did that. So I'll have to ask him. I'll have to ask him about that.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah. So where are you off to next? You know, you have a hard stop here. So we got a brief episode here downtown in the library lab. You've got more media to do even beyond just this. You just did that workshop at UBC. Then you got to fly. So what are your next moves? Immediate next moves.
Where immediate you next move. Yeah. Well, I land in Montreal at 6:30 a.m. and at 8:30 I'm in studio for a project called Vision Diversity that we're recording for the next 3 days.
Wow.
And then I'm flying back to New York. I'm playing Hartford Library with a duo with Albert Marquez, which is an amazing friend, piano player, artist that you should check out. He has a project called Freedom called First, which is a project with Keith Lamar that is someone, a jazz fan, artist, and poet that is on death row since his 20s. And he recorded the album from death row.
Wow.
From the prison. It's a pretty nice project.
Huh.
Just plugging it in because it's like pretty worth it to check out. But we have a duo that we recorded that we're going to release next year. And we're playing at the Hartford Library on Sunday in Connecticut. And then I'm playing at Maison Française in NYU on Monday, the 22nd. And then at Smalls on the 24th. You can log in online and check my band at Smalls.
It's I'm subscribed to the YouTube channel, so I'll see you pop up there. Like, they post their videos every day.
Yeah. Exactly. So, and I'm showcasing the New York version of the Latin Jazz Project. So it's Gabriel Jacari on piano and Raul Reyes on bass and Juan Carlos Polo on drums.
It was quartet.
Quintet. Oh, quintet with congas. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta bring congas at Smalls. I mean, if I play at Smalls, you don't often see congas at Smalls. So I love to do it. And then the next day of Smalls, I'm flying back to Montreal, and we're releasing Capi on the 26th of April, and we're playing it at Montreal for the Odd Sound Jazz Festival, and then Rimouski. I'm releasing Capi in the Rimouski, opening for Laurie Friedman, which is a pretty amazing artist in the improv experimental music scene. So it's going to be great. Huh. And then it's May.
Yeah. Rimouski, that's where you're from, right?
Yes.
So exactly. One of my first guests on this podcast was my first boss, a guy named Claude Giguère, violin player, and he was born and raised in Rimouski. And I worked for him for like a nonprofit violin school kind of program. One time we got to go on an Eastern Canadian trip with the group, and we went to play in Rimouski on the trip, and he walked me down the main street there. We got an ice cream. I was 20 years old, and he was like showing off his old town.
So it's beautiful,
I have a special memory of it. Yeah. There were so many mosquitoes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you didn't go at the right time. There's only like 2 months that is very, very nice.
This is right in the middle of summer.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for bringing your joy to Vancouver. Safe, happy travels. I was almost going to say like, oh, I hope you get a chance to slow down and rest. But hey, maybe not. Maybe I just want you to keep rolling because you seem to be having fun. So thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Rhythm Changes podcast. If you enjoyed it, become a member for free today at rhythmchanges.ca. You'll get the free weekly article where I send out stuff about artists, events, and recordings in our scene, including episodes like this, plus the week's upcoming gigs from the gig list. This episode was hosted, mixed, produced, and edited by me. Rhythm Changes is a Turnoff Music production, and I will catch you with more turnaround time in the next one.